police photographing our license plate.
What are we doing for veterans returning home damaged physically and mentally, suffering from depression, homelessness, and suicide?
Why did the Supreme Court deposit corporate money into our electoral process?
Should we redefine middle class as working poor? Or is it just another Wall Street merger?
What's really behind new voter picture ID laws in certain states?
Why aren't NBC, ABC, CBS, and Fox asking these questions?
Welcome to The Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. I'm Marcello Rolando. The mission of The Reasonable Voice is to connect the dots between politics and finance, the need for better and more affordable education, our humanity, world peace, and of course, the arts, which we then gladly provide our listeners, the voting public, as informative food for thought to provoke their self-determination and appetite for equal opportunity. The Reasonable Voices are advocates prioritizing education, preserving our history, leading by example for a peaceful and prosperous world by evoking and embracing the creative artist and political unity as solutions to our challenges. Today, my guest is Sean Barnett, and we're going to have a lot to say, much of it about Citizens United. So, first of all, hello, Sean. How are you?
I'm doing fine, Marcello. How are you?
I'm just terrific, thank you. Excited about what's coming up in the next week. But before we get started, tell us a bit about yourself.
Sure. I'm an activist with the Democratic Party. I've been working on the issue of money in politics and the Citizens United decision since 2011. About a year after the decision was made, and I've been focusing on that because I see that as a very important enabling issue to many of the things that those of us who believe in progressive government are trying to accomplish. I see that the money in politics problem really gets in the way of many things, and so I've been focusing a lot of my energies on that. And I live in Annandale, Virginia, and I'm active in the Democratic Party of Northern Virginia.
Fantastic. Citizens United has certainly gotten a lot of press, but could you tell us a bit, remind us of how Citizens United was, shall we say, created?
Yeah. Citizens United, the decision, the Supreme Court decision came about because the group Citizens United was looking to air a movie about Hillary Clinton when she was a candidate for president back in 2008.
Mm-hmm.
And the question came up as to when they could do that, and you know, under the campaign finance laws that existed at the time, this is the McCain-Feingold campaign finance law, whether they were allowed to do that. At the time, the law actually did not permit them to do what they were looking to do, and so they filed suit in federal court, asking to have that part of the law overturned on First Amendment grounds to allow them to air the movie the way they wanted to air it.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened is the case came up through the federal courts, came into the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court decided to expand the scope of the case that they were deciding, rather than just deciding on the ability of the Citizens United group to air the movie. They took up the very broad issue of campaign spending and campaign contributions, and so they came up with this very broad ruling in Citizens United that the so-called independent expenditures, as opposed to direct contributions to candidates, the so-called independent expenditures could not be limited, so that and the net effect of that was that corporations and other groups, including unions, could now spend unlimited amounts of money in these so-called independent ways. So the net effect, and because of some decisions by the Federal Election Commission, the independence requirement is very weak, and the so-called independent expenditures are essentially adjuncts to ordinary campaign contributions and campaign spending. And so that what's ultimately created this flood of money into our politics.
Gotcha. And of course, some of the practical impacts of money in our politics is that, you know, you put money in a politician's pocket and you've got a politician in your pocket, it seems to me.
That's right. It creates it creates an obligation, and it's not a binding obligation, and it's rare that the politician will say, if you give me a contribution or make an independent expenditure on my behalf, I will do something specific, because that would fall afoul of the bribery laws, which are still on the books and which are still valid.
Mm-hmm.
But it creates a psychological obligation, and the politicians are aware that they need the support in order to conduct successful campaigns, and so they do things to benefit their supporters so that support will be forthcoming when they need it to run for office, and that it creates this dependency upon the big donors,
mm-hmm.
be they individuals or big corporate donors or nonprofit organizations that are spending money in politics. And so you end up with the elected officials end up doing the bidding of those who have the resources to bring to bear in our elections.
Yeah. So what can we do about it? I know you are, the last time I saw you, we were on the Hill visiting Senator Tim Kaine of Virginia to talk about an amendment to the Constitution to counter or repeal, if you like, Citizens United. Where are we on that, and what other things can the average American citizen do about this being outspent in our own elections?
Well, you mentioned the amendment, and that's something that is really necessary to overturn the Citizens United decision, because it was made on the grounds of the First Amendment. So an ordinary act of Congress cannot overturn or a decision of the Supreme Court that's mm-hmm. based on an interpretation of the Constitution. The Constitution has to be changed or possibly reinterpreted by the Supreme Court. And mm-hmm. the Supreme Court has reversed itself in the past, and so it's possible that you could get a different decision of a later Supreme Court
mm-hmm.
that changes the Citizens United decision. But if we're going to, if the people are going to change the decision affirmatively, then it would take a constitutional amendment.
Mm.
And that's something, there's a bill in Congress now, there are two bills actually, one introduced in the Senate and one introduced in the House, that would overturn Citizens United with respect to the ability of Congress and the states to regulate campaign spending. They would be, and contributions, they would be given that power again, the First Amendment notwithstanding.
Yes.
The amendment would do that. And this is in the Senate, it's the Udall, Tom Udall bill,
uh-huh.
Senate Joint Resolution 19, that is coming up for a vote very soon.
Uh-huh. And is it the same as the, I know there are a number of organizations fighting for the same thing, but a Democracy for the People amendment, is that the same as the Udall amendment, or are they two slightly different?
That's it, it's a popular name, if you will. And there are many organizations that are advocating for that. And the way someone who wanted to help could get involved right now, the thing to do is to call, if your senator is not a co-sponsor, not yet a co-sponsor of the bill,
mm-hmm.
call your senator and ask him or her to co-sponsor the bill.
Yes.
And say that you as a constituent support this, you believe it's the right thing to do, and that they ought to do that. Right now we have, I believe it's 49 or 50 co-sponsors of the bill, but they're all either Democrats or independents.
Yes.
So it would be, it will, in order to pass an amendment, it would require Republican support.
Yes.
Because of the nature of the division in Congress now. And so if you wanted help with this, if you have a Republican senator, it would help a great deal for them to hear from you that you believe that this is the right thing to do. So that primarily is the way that someone who wanted to get involved could get involved in the short run. In the longer run, you could get involved with some of these organizations that are working to pass a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United.
Mm-hmm.
And they're taking a long-term view of the problem, because it's difficult to pass a constitutional amendment So they'll be continuing to work on this issue, you know, for the months and years ahead.
And perhaps it's a good time to make crystal clear that Citizens United, in practicality, gave corporations personhood. And with that, you suddenly have this giant budget personhood able to give millions and millions of dollars into the to inject that into the political system, our election system in particular. So this is not by any means a democratic issue. This is a United States of America voter election issue. Yes?
That's right. That's right. It's not just a Democratic Party issue. It's about the ability of the individual person to express himself or herself through the electoral process. And it's about the voices of the people being heard and really the will of the people at large being done by our government. And when people are asked about this issue, interestingly, overturning Citizens United has very wide support. Be the people, Republicans, Democrats, or independents, majority of Americans agree that the politicians ought to respond to the people and not merely those who have the resources to spend in political campaigns. And so it is not just a Democratic Party issue. Now, it's broken out this way right now with this particular bill because the Republican Party leadership currently does not favor overturning Citizens United, but that's an issue with the Republican Party leadership. It's not an issue with the Republican Party rank and file. They, when they're asked about it, support overturning the decision.
Well, I'm not at all surprised at that. I mean, everybody wants their vote to count, regardless of which side you're voting for. You want your vote to count, and Citizens United certainly does tip the scale way out of proportion on that issue. I'm just wondering, you know, I've heard about the other Virginia senator, Senator Mark Warner. He's talking about dark money, get dark money out. But does that solve the problem?
What he's talking about is disclosing all of the spending that occurs in politics. And right now, because of the Citizens United decision and then some decisions by the Federal Election Commission and the IRS, it's possible for people to set up organizations to conceal the identity of the people who are donating the money to spend in these independent expenditures in political campaigns, so that the public at large never knows who is actually doing the spending. It's just the name of some group, and they typically have innocuous titles like Americans for America that don't tell you anything about who they really are. And Senator Warner supports Congress requiring disclosure of all political spending to include presumably the identities of the individuals who are doing the spending. Now, that would help. I mean, it helps to know who's spending the money, because then you have a better idea of where they're coming from, but it still doesn't solve the problem completely.
Yes, and I personally am offended by how they take advantage of our patriotism. You know, it's a myth, of course, that one party is more patriotic or religious than the other, but when you give your super PACs these ultra-patriotic sounding names, then good Americans are fooled by that, you know? They think, oh, it's got to be good who isn't for prosperity, etc. But it's time to look past the titles and the commercials and even the court case with the Supreme Court and see what we can do to correct this. Give us some ideas, a couple of specifics of these super PACs and even nonprofits and how it's impacting on our democracy.
Sure. In the last presidential election cycle in 2012, outside groups spent $1.1 billion in all federal campaigns.
Wow.
That was out of a total of $6 billion spent in the campaign. So there's a tremendous amount of money is being spent in our political campaigns right now. And it's being spent by a very small group of people. The fraction of the American people who can give large amounts to politics or who are willing to do that is very, very small. It's a very small percentage of the population. So what you have is influence being wielded by a very small group, and what they do is they influence the elected officials to vote in ways that support them. And here's, you know, one example of the way that outside groups can have greatly disproportionate influence on our politics is if you look at what happened with the firearm background check bill that mm-hmm. was introduced by Senator Toomey and Senator Manchin after the school shooting in Connecticut.
Yes.
That bill was blocked. The passage was blocked in the Senate by senators who had all received money from the NRA.
Yes, yes.
And so they were under their influence, despite the fact that about 90% of the American public supported background checks for firearm purchases. So that's, you know, one really egregious example
yes.
of how this undue influence is being exerted.
You know, especially when there is a good deal of disunity between the various political factions, but mostly I feel that's media and leadership, and the leadership in the parties and the media slant on things, because Americans basically, when I talk to them, I have a couple of talk shows, and I talk to everybody, and there are a number of issues on which a huge number of Americans agree, and Citizens United is one of them, even when it means, you know, that their guy won't get as much money. Or this whole thing of shifting the district so it you get the vote you want. There's a lot of voters out there who don't like that kind of thing. Basically, Americans see that kind of thing as cheating. And, of course, being able to give billions of dollars and pump into an election, at the very least, you can call that cheating. What do you think?
No, I agree. I agree. I think it is a matter of fundamental fairness in our politics, and the campaign spending is one example of rampant unfairness right now. The gerrymandering that you mentioned has gotten to a point where it's a science.
Yes.
And it's all done by sophisticated computer programs,
yes.
analyzing precinct by precinct and creating these districts to come out the way the people drawing the lines so that the elections come out the way the people drawing the lines would like them to come out.
Yes.
And it really does end up denying people an opportunity to express themselves through the political process. So, yeah, I agree with you. Those are both examples of you know, really unfairness in our current political situation.
All right, we're going to stop there. I'm talking today with Sean Barnett, who is a Democratic activist, but he is speaking to us about issues that involve all Americans, whether Democratic or Republican, Independent, Libertarian, whatever. And we'll be right back. Stay with us. There's more. We're going to talk some solutions when we return. Stay with us. We'll be right back.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. The first thought you might have after watching Stephen Knight's terrific experimental film, Lock, is how did they do that, and why am I coming away feeling challenged, delighted, and fascinated? Here's the setup. Ivan Locke, played by Tom Hardy, leaves his critical job, wife, and sons with no warning in order to drive from London to Birmingham to be with another woman who is having his baby. It's roughly a 90-minute drive, and Locke is the only on-screen character. No car chases, no guns, no women. Still, this is a gripping exploration of the human desire to control our destinies. Locke is an ordinary guy at the end of his world. While we are never asked to understand him, we come to identify with him completely. The burden is entirely on the talented Mr. Hardy and his car phone, a bunch of voice actors, and some brilliant photography, which provides an eerie impressionistic beauty with reflections of light off windows and steel. Experimental? Oh, yes. Knight wrote the film in 2.5 weeks and shot it for under $2 million. Every night they drove the highway in caravan, filming the entire script twice in sequence. From the results of those nights well spent, they pieced together the final print. Fascinating. Lock. Not in theaters. Discovery through rental.
Welcome back to the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio. My guest today is Sean Barnett. He is a political activist and who lives in Northern Virginia. And a lot of things are coming up that his organizations and other organizations are trying to get Congress to respond, primarily perhaps with this amendment to give back the financial control of elections to Congress, and then, and in that sense, overrule Citizens United decision by the Supreme Court. We do have a balance of power that allows the Supreme Court and the President and the Congress to be equal, but there are ways that the system was set up that way by our founding fathers so that it was checks and balance, exactly what they call it, so that if one goes in a direction that the other two think, well, maybe that's not quite right, there are legal ways of literally amending that situation, and that's where we find ourselves. I believe the vote is Monday, September 8th, yes, Sean?
That's right. That's right. The bill introduced by Senator Udall to amend the Constitution to overturn the Citizens United decision vote will be on September 8th. And that's first going to be a cloture vote to bring the matter to the floor of the Senate. In other words, it's potentially subject to a filibuster. Uh-huh. And if the filibuster is overcome, then it would be voted on substantively by the Senate as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
And right now, it's looking like the bill may be blocked by the filibuster. As you know, you need 60 votes to overcome.
Yes.
That. And right now, based on what people are being told, it sounds like it may not have quite have the 60 votes. So that may be the, you know, where it turns out on Monday.
But it is a great beginning. My latest information is that 50 senators, not the two from Virginia, but not including Kane and Warner, but 50 senators have said that they will support it. But as you say, it has to get to the floor first. It's a little complicated, but it's in the long run, although certainly it has become a science to gerrymander the system. But in the long run, having these checks and balances and even a filibuster has served a purpose historically, if we can just sort of get them back to serving we the people as opposed to we the politicians. But, you know, some big donors, even individuals, we know, it's not just corporations, there's some individuals who are willing to advocate openly for candidates to support. I think we were talking about that toward the end of the last segment. With no limits on campaign spending, big donors have this disproportionate advantage. Obviously, if someone gives you $1 million, you're more likely to listen to what he thinks you should do than if somebody gave you $100. But beyond that obvious thing, as you say, it's not as blatant as quid pro quo, but it's there. So what do we do? Do we go with Senator Warner after Monday, if Monday's vote doesn't go well, and begin to have a vote on contribution disclosures? What's our next step?
Well, if Monday's vote doesn't go well, and no one really expects the measure to pass the full Senate, that would require a two-thirds majority or 67 votes. And those votes just aren't there right now.
Mm-hmm.
But it is a huge step forward to actually bring a bill up for a vote. This is the first time that will be happening. And so that is a great step forward in the 4 years since the Citizens United decision was made.
Yes.
But what we do after the vote on Monday is we keep at it. We keep at it at the grassroots level. Individuals and organizations who support overturning Citizens United just keep telling the elected officials that that they support that. And, you know, if the elected officials don't turn around and support the measure, that ultimately people will begin to vote against them when they come up for election. And
yes,
that's the ultimate expression of the political process. Senator Warner's bill on disclosing campaign expenditures or the donors is a good idea, and that would be a step forward, and it's something that ought to be done. But it's not enough when, as you say, you have a very wealthy individual who's willing to advocate openly for a candidate and say, I want this person to be elected because I want him to support my interests and I'm willing to spend $1 million to do it. You know, disclosing that fact may not stop that person at all. But it's still unfair that one person is able to have such influence by virtue of having the resources that they do.
Yes.
So the disclosure bill would be a disclosure law would be a good thing, but it doesn't go far enough because it doesn't solve that problem. It also doesn't solve the problem of someone making a threat to a politician coming in and saying, well, if you don't do what I want, I'm going to spend $1 million against you in your next campaign. That's never disclosed, and it does happen, and the elected officials are fearful of that, and so they can vote accordingly to protect themselves from such threats. Disclosure would not solve that problem. That's only solved by giving Congress and the states, again, the power to regulate campaign contributions and spending.
Let's get to also the other side of the coin. I think when people hear amending the Constitution, there are a lot of people who think or feel, I'm not criticizing, I'm just stating a fact, that the Constitution is chiseled in granite. It's in stone, and it's not to be touched. But in reality, there have been a number of amendments. Indeed, I believe every generation has produced an amendment. An amendment is not a bad thing. We don't take it lightly. It doesn't happen all the time, as we can certainly see by the ERA. That's been floating around for some time, still looking for three more states so that it can be an amendment to the Constitution. But tell us about the history of and the practice of and the benefit of, if you will, amending the Constitution.
Sure. The Constitution has been amended 27 times so far. Mm-hmm. The first 10 were the Bill of Rights that were passed shortly after the Constitution was ratified by the Founding Fathers. But even after those 10, you've had 17 additional amendments that have been passed over the 200-year history of our country. And those amendments are the amendment process is difficult for a good reason. We don't want the people or the government to be tinkering with the Constitution, if you will. We don't want to take the amendment process lightly, but amendments have been passed where it was necessary to remedy problems with fundamental problems with our government.
Mm-hmm.
For example, it was a constitutional amendment that ended slavery after the Civil War.
Yes, yes.
Constitutional amendment gave women the right to vote.
Yes.
It was a constitutional amendment that allowed the people to vote for their own senators as opposed to the state legislatures.
Mm-hmm.
Constitutional amendment gave 18-year-olds the right to vote when they were, you know, previously they were being drafted and sent to fight in Vietnam without the ability to vote, and
that was
unfair, and so it was appropriate that they have the right to vote. So constitutional amendments have been used throughout the years to rectify problems with our government, to make us a better country. And this is a case where the Supreme Court has made a bad decision in Citizens United, and the constitutional amendment is necessary, and I believe, and many people believe, should be passed in order to rectify that.
Yes, and we have some precedent for that, too. Not that it was the Supreme Court, but there was, of course, an amendment to the Constitution, prohibition, that didn't work out. So it's not like when something doesn't work, that's the whole point. I think of the Constitution not as something in stone. I think of it as something that is unique to the world, pretty much, and it is a guideline. It is laws of the land, of course, but it is also a guideline, especially considering the men who originated it. They were, after all, looking at a world situation and trying to anticipate the future, as well as not repeating the mistakes of the past and moving forward in the present. I mean, it's an amazing thing that they have accomplished, but I don't think Franklin, Jefferson, and Adams, and Hancock, and, you know, Dickerson, I don't think those guys thought this was it. It was never going to happen because, as you say, they themselves gave us the Bill of Rights afterwards because someone thought, aha, this needs, we need more than this. We need to protect the individual. So with the prohibition amendment, when that didn't go well, producing Al Capone and such, the Congress then reversed itself and came up with another amendment, and that was a good thing. So the process, I guess my point is, do we have examples like that that prove that the process of amending the Constitution is a good thing, and it has happened, and when it hasn't been a good thing, it's been fixed, and it is lawful? We're not breaking rules when you pass an amendment. We are trying to make the rules fairer, more in keeping with the current situation the world and the country might be in, or a certain segment of the population may be facing, like freeing the slaves. So amendments are not to be feared. They're to be respected, but certainly they are a part of, from the very beginning, as you've said, of the Constitution. They're part of the growth of the Constitution, as the Constitution is part of the growth of the country. Jump in, Sean. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. I mean, Thomas Jefferson himself said that the Constitution was intended to be amended when circumstances dictated.
Exactly.
When an amendment would make the Constitution better for the country, it should be amended. So the Founding Fathers put the amending process in the Constitution for a reason. They knew that the changes would have to be made as time advanced, and so the amendment process has been used over the years to make changes to improve our government. And the example, the examples I cited earlier are some that were more salient. And you mentioned prohibition. That was an instance where probably the only instance, I would say, where we passed an amendment that turned out to be a mistake, and then we undid it. So
yes,
we have that power too. So there is a flexibility in the Constitution that's in there by design to allow us to continue to have the government that's appropriate for us and for our times. And I think we've done that over the years, and this would be another example, to my mind, mm-hmm. of making a change that's necessary.
Well, I want to say, especially since I'm at least 4 days a week, I'm a Virginia resident, and September is the month in which I was born, I'm very pleased to see that so much seems to be suddenly a push, and I mean, I know this has been going on, nothing happens overnight, but this has been going on for some time with people like you at the front line, but suddenly it seems September, the activists and advocates for equality of opportunity, for ERA, for Udall Amendment, are descending upon Washington, D.C. And I'd like to go on record. I've been on the Hill a number of times, especially with our mutual friend, Andrea Miller, and I've had members of Congress say to me that one face in front of them is worth 1,000 votes. So if you can go to Congress and be a part of some of these events, I know there's something, I believe, on Friday, September 5th, something's going on the Hill, and September 13th, and so it goes. But even if you can't carpool and go up, the next best thing is picking up your telephone and calling your representative and calling your senator, in this case, because the vote is September 8th. But let's, Sean, try to give people a little assistance on to make it as easy as possible to find the telephone number. I know there are a number of ways, but let's let you tell us. To find the telephone number of your senator and your representative, and to make that call, and to also not be comfortable with getting a voicemail or even an assistant answering and saying, yes, I'll take a message. That's fine. Be polite. Be patient. Be all those. Be patriotic. But call back. we say a lot about being we the people and we run the government, but you don't unless you get involved, unless you make a call, send a letter. Just clicking on a petition online is great, but it's not nearly enough. What are your thoughts, Sean?
Yeah, absolutely. And the easiest way to find your senator or your congressman's phone number is to just go on the internet and do a search on his or her name. You'll find one of the first links that comes up is his or her office, the webpage for the office, and you can click on that, and the phone number will be right there on the front page, and you can call that, and you can speak to someone in the office, or, you know, possible you may get voicemail. But nevertheless, leave a message. They do pay attention to phone calls. They do make a difference when they hear lots of phone calls from their constituents.
Yes.
And so that's how you could do that. If you wanted to say something in writing, most congressmen and senators have ways to leave essentially comments or letters through their website. And if you'd like to do that, you could do that as well.
Yes.
In many instances, you'll get a reply, too.
Yes.
Say if people watch their websites and will reply to constituents who email them about issues that they care about.
And I think, and I know from experience that this works, that call, and I also think, Sean, you let us know what you think of this. When you are calling about a specific thing, and actually some of the websites of members of Congress give you categories so that you can isolate right there online what is the issue you want to talk about, and I do believe they, for the most part, give an other category too, so you can write in if it's something other. But when you say either with a voicemail or with an assistant to the member of Congress or in a letter or whatever, or in phone, when you say, I would like to talk to my senator about and give a specific thing, there is really a great response. They, and the more calls they get, even repeated calls, they really do respond to that, because I hate to sound so jaded about it, but I feel the number one thing most members of Congress do from the moment they're elected is try to get reelected. Is that too harsh, Sean?
Well, that's essentially true, because the level of effort required to do it is very high. So
yes,
they do spend a lot of time campaigning, raising money. That's almost a daily activity, unfortunately. That's the nature of the process. But they do listen to their constituents when they get phone calls or email from them. So I would certainly encourage anyone who cares about this issue to make those phone calls or write that email.
Excellent. Well, I think this has been a marvelous conversation, Sean. This is Sean Barnett, a political activist, especially interested in all of us recognizing that Citizens United, allowing huge amounts of money from individuals and corporations, far much more money than most of us have, into our electoral process, is a problem that affects, negatively impacts every American family, at least 99.9% of us. And Sean Barnett and people like him are trying to get the Congress to pass an amendment that will essentially reverse Citizens United. So I hope you will be a part of that. Get online, find out who your senator and your representative, your senators, two for every state with the senators, and call them and email them in however way, and repeatedly let them know how you feel. Sean Barnett, thank you so very much for being on the show today. I greatly appreciate it. It was incredibly informative, and we'll be with you. Okay.
Thanks very much for the opportunity. Very happy to be able to be on your show and to speak to everyone about this important issue.
Fantastic. And we were listening, and the best to all you're doing, because you really are one of those leading the fight. So thank you.
Well, thanks very much.
All
thanks
right.
very much. I really appreciate that.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
Stay with us as we'll be right back with a final comment from The Reasonable Voice.
And now, another film rental discovery.
Welcome to the Indie Film Minute. Banned in the Arab world, deeply criticized by Israel, and offering no easy stereotypes for the rest of us, few people saw the attack in theaters. Maybe everyone should. The Attack is definitely not a feel-good film. It is a highly controversial, complex, and beautifully understated film, which explores the tragically twisted push-pull of Israeli-Palestinian relations at a deeply human level. There are no demons here. Dr. Amin Jafari, a Palestinian surgeon, practices his craft in Israel. He is receiving the highest award for his specialty, but his beloved wife, ostensibly attending her sick father, cannot attend the ceremony. She calls him just before the award is presented. It's the last time he will hear her voice. Still another suicide bomb has exploded in still another restaurant, tragically killing many victims, including his wife. Why was she at the restaurant, the authorities want to know. Was she pregnant? No. Surveillance videos show her entering the restaurant with a large belly. What remains of her body is shoulders and head, wounds indicative of a bomber. What follows is Amin's personal search to uncover his wife's innocence or guilt for the tragedy, and his own growing understanding of why. The attack, not in theaters. Greater understanding through rental.
Hello, I'm Marcello Rolando, The Reasonable Voice, thanking you for joining us in becoming one of the reasonable voices heard around the world. Mr. No Strategy President? Really? Who was that tan man in the tan suit attempting to rein in a non-investigative, pale-faced press hell-bent on colossally multiplying public hysteria to terrify TV gossip addicts into thinking the second coming of a president rushing to preemptive war with no exit strategy was at hand? It's tragic when media turns a vital to our nation's health and survival story into a circus obscuring family loss, need for both social and militarizing police rethinking, and as yet, an unarrested perpetrator into a movie of the week misdirection. But when social media leads cyberspace in the tan suit and no strategy chatter, then our intellectual power to perceive some degree of rational discernment in applying military power has been twisted all a Twitter, stumbling into Facebook talking heads. Haven't we had enough of grab the buzzword headline and fast tracking a deeper ditch into which we bury just the facts, ma'am? Yes, Obama is more JFK than I looked Putin in the eye, G.W. Bush. And if we could just broaden our perception of who gets to golf and who caddy, we might just survive cokeheads, Fox News, congressional conservatives, and thus avoid blowing up the world. If truly the White House press corps really didn't understand that in his judgment, President Obama hadn't yet received enough input to make a final decision about expanding fire from the heavens foreign policy on Syria, then the point that our education system is terribly lacking in providing basic skills is proven. We live in an America where police killed a black man buying a Walmart BB gun. What's next? Asian wives buying knife block sets in Bed Bath & Beyond? Maybe open carry is for whites only. We live in an America where sexual preference can get you wrapped in barbed wire, and free will doesn't mean free to marry whomever you choose. We live in an America where not having a penis means you're free to get paid less than penises like New York's Peter King, where parents intimidate busloads of field trip children while attempting to prohibit the vulnerable and innocent from entering the land of the free, where a Supreme Court tips the scale of justice out of balance in what the Founding Fathers created as our equalizer, free elections, where a family must grieve a loved one killed by a gunshot to the head because adults, himself, a mother, a father, and a gun range owner, thought it was okay for an 8-year-old to be given the feel of squeezing off a nosy, a feeling from which she will never be free. Have we forgotten we're either a part of the solution or we erode from within from self-inflicted inequality of opportunity, inadequate education, and a justice system corrupted by corporatism, hypocrisy, and cash? If not after intentionally dumping coal ash in North Carolina bathing water and coal chemicals in West Virginia drinking water, while non-elected official is empowered to shut off Detroit water, if not after Sandy Hook and Christie's misdirection of Sandy funds, if not after political redistricting to guarantee red states because billionaires failed to defeat 2012 voters, while Republican governors are increasingly expanding Obamacare Medicaid, if not after the Supreme Five, acting as though their principles in the Garden of Eden bestowed personhood on Wall Street corporations, can we not at least admit the truth about Thanksgiving, Wounded Knee, and that our Civil War never ended? If not in 2014, when exactly will we, the 49.95% tan blockers and the 49.95% tan amenable, honor our hallowed common ground by again embracing the equality of independence, a strategy of united we stand, divided we don't. Join us. Become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world. Thank you.
Thank you for continuing to listen to, support, and most of all, share the Reasonable Voice Blog Talk Radio with your friends both on and offline. In response to your emails, we are now accepting new company and business advertisers and welcoming organizations seeking to be one of our sponsors. To apply, please email us at thereasonablevoice@gmail.com.
Thank you for joining us today to make every day as reasonable as possible. We hope you will download and share our downloadable podcasts. I am Marcello Rolando, the Reasonable Voice, hoping you will become one of the reasonable voices heard round the world.